Thank you, Joyce. My name is Corey Klostermeyer. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober today by the grace of God, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as Joyce mentioned, I've been sober since January 22nd, 1981. And for that, I am very, very grateful. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a young teenager. I was 19 years old when I got here. And I came as I was talking to some of my old cronies that I got sober with. It's funny because this is my seventh international convention, and every 5 years when we have one of these, we have an opportunity to see people that we got sober with, and we're having a reunion get-together tomorrow morning. I got sober in the Moorhead Thursday Night Group in Moorhead, Minnesota, my hometown, and we're having a little gathering tomorrow, but I was talking to some of my friends yesterday about, you know, I came in as a really old 20-year-old, and today I'm a very young 54-year-old. It's amazing how, you know, by putting positive and constructive things into life and living a life based on principles, which the traditions which are near and dear to my heart are principles which have held Alcoholics Anonymous together for 80 years and have allowed me to live as a fine, upstanding human being for the length of my sobriety. It's the traditions that really are what hold this deal together. As we like to say around the rooms, the steps are how it works, but the traditions are why it works. And that's what holds us together. And this talk is basically around the 11th tradition, which reads, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at a level of press, radio, and films, period. So when that was written 76 years ago, whenever it was Bill penned that, there are things that we deal with today that we didn't have to even think about back then. TV isn't even mentioned there. And obviously all the things that go along today. I mean, it's amazing. We all walk around with these little devices that do everything. You know, my wife and I got in about 8 o'clock last night, and I've been to Atlanta a few times, but I wouldn't say that I know my way around, and all I have to do is punch in an address, and a little voice tells me where to go. I mean, it was a whole different thing back when Alcoholics Anonymous started, but the principle of personal anonymity at the public level hasn't changed from whether they were carving it on tablets or whether we're getting a Twitter feed. It's really the same thing, is that the reason that anonymity at the public level is paramount is that I'm not going to take credit for the idiot that I was when I was out there drinking. It's the disease of alcoholism. I'm also not going to take credit for the recovery that I have in Alcoholics Anonymous because it's a beautiful program that's been given me, and I can't take credit for that. When I speak, I like to say that I'm sober by the grace of God and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was explained to me that grace is the unmerited love and favor of. So how can I take credit for something that is a gift, and my sobriety and that grace is truly a gift? So what anonymity at the public level does for me is I'm not any better or any worse than anybody else. The best you can be in Alcoholics Anonymous is a member, and I'm a proud member of my home group. And it's been my home group now for a whopping 2 months. I just relocated from New York City back to Los Angeles, where I've lived previously, and my home group is the Pacific Group. We meet Wednesday nights in Brentwood, and about 800 people get together, and it's like going to a conference every week. And that room is full of lots of people from all walks of life. There are famous people there, and there are homeless people there, and you know what? We're all the same when we're there. The thing that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is it's the great leveler, and I talked about that. I came into AA an old 20, and today I'm a young 54. My mother was a child bride. She was 18 when she had me, and she's 72 today. And, you know, Mom's been dealt a couple of bad breaks, and, you know, she seems a lot older than she is. And the point that I'm making with that is I hang out with people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are my mother's age or older, and we all seem like we're the same age. And that's that spirit of that we are all the same, because we're all trudging the road of happy destiny. We're all going the same direction. You know, my upbringing was pretty meager. I was born to a teenage mother and a 22-year-old father in beautiful downtown Fargo, North Dakota. You don't get any more meager than that. And, you know, raised in kind of a lower middle class family with not a lot of opportunity. But the one thing that was prevalent in that family, even though we were poor, is there was a lot of pride and there was a lot of ego. And that's in me. I made a living my entire adult life as a salesperson. And, you know, to be a salesperson, you have to have a certain amount of self-esteem and ego and all of that. But what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me is it's allowed me to temper that I can stay right size. And that's come by following the traditions and having a sponsor and seeking the guidance of that individual. And this isn't a talk on sponsorship, but everything ties together. And the reason that sponsorship works in pointing me the right direction and to follow the traditions is a sponsor is somebody who knows me and loves me, but isn't me. And I've had the pleasure to sponsor lots of guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, and a few of them are in this room, and I'd like to thank them and other friends who have come to support me today, and my lovely bride for coming and supporting me today, because that's what we do. And the overwhelming spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous is we can do together what we can't do alone. And back to this tradition is that we is the collective body of Alcoholics Anonymous. I, as an individual, am just that, and what my individual thoughts are, what my individual desires are, what my claims to fame are, don't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's okay in what I do for a living, but it's not okay to be Corey, superstar, alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's not what we are. And it's about attraction, not promotion. It was interesting because if you go and you read, the General Service Office and the publishing arm have put together some pretty substantial pieces. And there was a white page that I was reading yesterday on the things that leave off where the written tradition stop, where it picks up, and it talks about social media and the internet and all of these things that we have to deal with today. And it was talking about that in Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's important for us to let people know who we are. I introduced myself at this forum because this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with my first and last name. And I've held service positions both in my group and in general service, and those people know me by my first and my last name because back when there was a phone book, you know, you couldn't look up Corey K in the phone book in, you know, Moorhead, Minnesota, or Cranford, New Jersey, or New York, New York, or Los Angeles, California, or Minneapolis, Minnesota, the various places I've lived, but you can look Corey Klostermeyer up. So it's important for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous to know who I am. But when I'm out there in the real world, people know that I don't drink. And some people know that I'm sober a long time. And some people know that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I don't go shouting that from the mountaintop. It's very selective when that information is disseminated. And the only appropriate reason for it to be disseminated is for me to be of help to somebody. And I've had that situation in the workplace where I've had an opportunity to break my anonymity and to be sober, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to sponsor people and to get them on the right track. I've had that opportunity with my clergy to do that. I was quite active in early sobriety in public information and in cooperation with the professional community. And I loved going out to the professional community because that's a body of people that come in contact with people like you and me that can get us pointed in the right direction. And we would set up time and we would talk to doctors and we'd talk to ministers and we'd talk to judges and we'd talk to law enforcement. And I made presentations as part of a church service. I went up and gave a little 10-minute public information talk. And in that, I was Corey K. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't give my first and last name because that's at the public level. So we stay anonymous at that level. But we want people to know where to find us. Also, it's okay to say that I am a sober person. Anywhere. I can say that I'm a sober person as long as I don't say that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because doing that at the public level is a break of anonymity. And what that does is, maybe I'm not a good example. Maybe I go out and I do something really stupid, and people at the public level say, that Corey guy, he said he's a member of AA, and he's an absolute idiot. You know, that deal Alcoholics Anonymous is just for a bunch of jerks. I'm not going to be a part of that. You know, it's kind of cliche, but it's also kind of sweet that I love the saying that I might be the only copy of a big book that somebody gets. And it's amazing when those opportunities come along. Back where I got sober in Fargo, Moorhead, as I mentioned, I was very active in CPC and PI, and one of the local universities there, North Dakota State University, this is probably in about 1983 or 84, had an opportunity to do a public information broadcast where we basically told a 10-minute snippet of our story on a broadcast, radio broadcast. And, you know, we followed the AA guidelines, and it was very anonymous, but we told in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. And the gratification that you get out of that is within 2 months of that, I was at my home group, and there was a newcomer who had been coming for about 6 weeks. And the meeting that I got sober in was a call-up group. It was a one-hour meeting, and we called people up from the audience to each share for about 5 minutes. So over a one-hour meeting, you get five or six people to get up and share. And it was the chairperson's job to kind of mix it up, to have a brand-new person followed by somebody with some time. And, you know, if the meeting got a little negative, have somebody bring it up. And there's this gentleman who was sober about 6 weeks, and he was called on to get up and speak. And he said in his story that the reason he came to Alcoholics Anonymous, as he had listened to this radio broadcast, and these young people had told their story, and it prompted him to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I teared up a little bit because that's what we do. That's the appropriate way of carrying the message at the public level. You don't go, as I said before, at the top of a mountaintop, and you don't go proclaiming, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, see how great I am, because it's not about that. Anonymity at the public level is the great leveler. As I said before, no one member is any greater than the other and than the other member. And I always have to bear that in mind and always put the well-being of others in front of my selfish wants and desires. And that's why I was always at conflict. You know, when I came here at 19, I had so few friends I could have held a party in a phone booth because I was just always at conflict with people because I was always putting my selfish wants and desires ahead of others' needs. And it's funny because Janice and I got here about 8 o'clock last night and registration had closed, so our hotel had a nice executive lounge. They had a little food up there, so we went and grabbed some dinner, and she said to me, honey, about how many people do you think you'll know at this conference this week? I said, probably a couple thousand, and you know that just blew her away, but I've lived lots of places. I've lived in 6 different states, and I've lived in 8 different cities, and I've always been active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what you do. You just get to know people when you're out there doing the deal, and thank God that I've had good sponsorship that has pointed me to the right direction, and I'm sensing that my time is nearing its end, but I just want to give a shout out to my first sponsor, Louie H., who's in this room today. This guy saved my life. You know, I was a little snot-nosed punk that came in here that had all the answers, and I didn't even know what the questions were. And this is the guy that patiently worked with me when I asked him things like, how long do I have to go to these stupid meetings? And he said, you have to go until you want to go, and then you never have to go again. And I'm telling you what, at 34 years and change, I go to Alcoholics Anonymous because I want to go, and it truly is the bright spot of my life. And that big growth spurt for me in Alcoholics Anonymous was leaving the nest, because it's real easy to work the steps and have a smile on your face and live a tradition-centered life when you're living among the people that you got sober with. But when you have that opportunity to leave and go out there in the big bad world, it's about what you've been taught. And that happened for me at 4.5 years sober. Is I did what they taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I worked hard. I gave them a dime for their nickel, showed up early, stayed late, and was a worker among workers. And at 4.5 years of sobriety, an opportunity came up to move about 1,500 miles away from where I grew up, to move all the way to the East Coast in New Jersey. And I didn't know a soul there in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Louis stood on his front yard. The moving truck was leaving. And I was in my little Mazda. I was going to, you know, drive across the country to my new home. And he gave me a hug, and he kissed me on the forehead and told me he loved me and told me how proud he was of me and told me I was a good AA. And he told me something that has held me in good stead ever since. He said, go out there and be a good AA and don't go trying to change them. And that is humility. That is anonymity at the public level. That's going there and accepting what you're given. And I did that. I went to my job, and I worked real hard the first couple of days. And the third day I was there, I had an opportunity to call Intergroup, which I was taught. And I said, I've just moved here, and I'm looking for a meeting. And they said, do you need a ride? I said, no, I've got a car. I can get there. So there's a meeting starting in an hour, about a mile from where you are. And I went in there, and I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't going in there as, you know, Corey Kay, who just moved here from Minnesota, and I'm going to straighten you guys out. And, you know, I'm a big hot shot. You know, I've been a GSR. I know what that's all about. I just went in there and did what my sponsor said, and I humbly was a member, and that has held me in good stead everywhere that I've lived. And I just try to live a tradition and an AA-centered life, and my life is richly blessed. And I'm just going to wrap the way that I always do to say that everything that I am today and ever will be is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless.
Thank you very much, Corey. I mentioned to the speakers before they started, I said, you have 20 minutes. We've been instructed to cut you off at 20 minutes if we can. I said, I'll pull your coat jackets or I'll pull your pants, you know. So, and he still had 3 minutes, and I didn't get a chance to do that. Okay. Our next speaker is John L. from New York, and his sobriety date is May 8th, 1982.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is John.
Hi, John.
And, hey, Kyle, we're in good shape now because Corey knew something about the topic. So, so we can. And I don't know. Sometimes I get emotional when I speak. It wasn't that way. But I used to, like, until I was like 55, I was like a rock, you know? And so. Kurt, you got one more year, and you better start packing some tissue. But the other thing is, I've always stressed to my sponsees, well, my sponsor stressed to me, was if you're going to tell your story or speak, you don't write it down, okay? You got to leave room for the higher power, which my friend Tommy just reminded me. And I've always passed that on to people that I sponsor. And a lot of these guys, especially if they're new, you know, the guy's shaky and nervous, and you're telling them no. You don't. Well, so I got to make it a point so I don't catch hell. It's not written out. They're not notes. They're bulletin points, right? That's what they are. So. My home group is the Hill Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll get emotional right off the start. we meet Wednesday and Friday evenings from about 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And if you're ever at the Elmira Correctional Facility during those times, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. So. It's a max A prison. And, you know, speaking of escapes, right, which we've heard something about, Elmira had the most escapes and unfortunately the most suicides in the state. So people really don't want to be in there. But our group has actually had guys request to stay at that facility so they could come to our Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Or they're that much involved in their group. And also, there's a number of people here that are involved in that group. There's no difference. The people that work in, corrections are very enthusiastic, and there's a lot of great stuff that gets done and very dedicated. But one difference, our group, we consider ourselves members. That's the only difference. You got inside members and outside members. So when we go in there, we're just going to our home group. It's not a big deal. Except you got to go through a little, you know, like six locked gates and metal detectors and stuff. But anyways, I also, real quick, I got to make amends to the guy that I went back to try to find him so I could do a 10-step amends at the Northeast Regional Hospitality Room. Because I had just gotten here and I'd been all around the building looking for a cup of AA coffee. You know, and I saw the other coffee for sale, but it's like, you know, I guess I can't. It wasn't, and it's not so much the money. It just, you know, it didn't have the blood, sweat, and tears that go into a real cup of Alcoholics Anonymous coffee. And so I went there, and I told them, you should never have given in on not having coffee. And this poor guy, so I got to go back and make an amends to him. However, I did find AA coffee in the Australian New Zealand hospitality room. So I want to thank them. All right, real quick, I just want to look at personal anonymity and public anonymity. Okay, because I think there is a difference. Didn't Dr. Bob say that there's two ways to violate the tradition, and those anonymity traditions? And one was being too anonymous. Even within the fellowship, sometimes we're too anonymous. And also in those opportunities where we could reach out to the still suffering alcoholic. And the other way is to violate the tradition at the level of press, radio, or films. So I had a great sponsor. All right, he was a guy. I got sober. I was just turned 27 years old, and I'd seen what alcohol can do. My God, my father lost his driver's license for 10 years back before they got tough on DWI. All right, and we lived in the country, so we bummed a lot of rides, and I later became a really good hitchhiker. But I'll tell you, when I drink booze, it's different because it's me and I like it. That's all the difference there's got to be. All right? So I jumped into it, with both feet. And I loved it. And I was a child of my generation. And if any of you don't remember the 70s, I see they got a TV show. On the sign out here, you can do it. And so I was a Boone's Farm kid and the Ripple wine and all that. And then we started getting these tiny packages from a friend had a brother in Berkeley, California. These little tiny packages would come in. And I started wearing a cape. And I had a magic wand. It was a curtain rod. Right? And I became a borderline space cadet. But what brought me back, the ballast in my life, was booze. Right? Because that's what brought me back and kept me from floating off. So, like I said, I loved it. I was a hell-raising kid. I got in a little trouble. My family brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason they knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was because a friend of the family got a DWI, thought he had to go to a meeting, asked my older brother to go with him. My brother said he always wanted to see what an alcoholic looked like, so he went. My brother liked it. My brother stayed sober for 59 days. During the 59 days, they were sober. They found my pop passed out downtown, and they shook him awake and asked him if he wanted to go to a party. And when my dad came to, he was sitting in the middle of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Yep. Later on, as I was doing my thing, my beautiful wife, we started a family. I tried to control my drinking. I tried hard. And then I started working out of town. At that time, I'd left the university, dropped out really, and I was getting, I had tried to control my drinking, and I was getting thirsty, so I started working out of town, and pretty soon, here it comes back, round two, here we go. And eventually lost the business and ended up, before we were done, lost everything and ended up living on public assistance in a big dumpy house, had two little girls. I had a bad drunk and began to try to quit drinking on my own. And I was a complete, total, 100% absolute failure stopping drinking on my own. My family members came back to AA around that time, and they brought me. And then they left me like an orphan on the AA doorstep. They all went back out drinking. I stayed sober by the skin of my teeth because I called the guy I met at the meetings. And he said, come on, let's have coffee. He didn't ask me what was going on, but as soon as I could have coffee, I didn't go out with them. I didn't go back. Then the old timers grabbed me. They brought me into AA. My sponsor sat at the end of a table and said, hey, kid, it's time to stop jipping yourself. I thought, what in the hell is he talking about? He was a big Irishman. He had about 30 years sober at that time. He actually got sober down in Brooklyn. Hey, kid, it's time to stop jipping yourself. And he became my sponsor. Eventually, after some more trials and tribulations and not working the steps except the first half of the first step. I had to totally and absolutely surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous. I made a total decision, absolutely, right, that I would do whatever it took to get what the people in these rooms have. And at that point, I began to get sober. My sponsor said at one point, the Future Farmers of America want to hear somebody from AA give a talk. I have no idea why the Future Farmers of America in Bradford County, Pennsylvania want to have an AA give a talk, but I did. And he was good though, he was smart. He said, read this, speaking at non-AA meetings. So one of the first things I learned is make sure you make the point. Nobody speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? On behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous. No pictures and no full names. So I go in, give the talk. I couldn't find a job anywhere. My wife and I were really having a hard time. And my sponsor said, after the Lord's Prayer, you yell out, this was the early 80s, a bad recession, you yell out, you need work, you'll do anything. And I waited till after the Lord's Prayer. I yelled out, I need work. I'll do anything. And these old-timers gave me work, pounding fence posts on their ranch, doing roofing in the winter, whatever. My wife and I were separated and divorced at one point. I got an ad in the newspaper, 2 years sobriety and sales experience, it said. And there was a post office box, and that's it. I had worked like weekends for the Salvation Army. I went. It turned out it was in the middle of the prison, Elmira Prison. We're a prison town. And I was hired, really, by an interview conducted by a guy by the name of Buford Peterson out of the Fellowship Center in part of the Mission Society in New York, and him and this Dr. Barry. And he was an ex-con and a recovering drunk. He gave me a job. You know. So I was the happiest guy in the prison. Anyhow. But one thing, Uncle Charlie from Intergroup said, you got to help us get the meetings going again. I said, Charlie, I just starting up there. I don't know what to do. He said, you got to help. And so I did help him start to get the meetings again. Now I had to make a decision. Am I going to break my personal anonymity or not? Okay. I decided at that level, I got to break my personal anonymity. And I began to go into the meetings. They had to have a staff member present. There was a very violent situation at that time. And I would go into the meeting. Now, how am I going to go into the meetings? I got to get rid of authority. That means my authority. I'm not going to go in and play games. I'm sorry, I don't wear two hats. All right? I'm one guy. I got one hat. I got one head. One heart. But I got to follow the traditions. I'm one that believes as long as we follow those traditions and we got a good cup of strong black coffee, we can go anywhere. All right? And so that was my experience. And we had great meetings. We brought in hundreds of people to workshops and all kinds of stuff. It was a wonderful experience. And I was able to go in there and just be a member of AA. I even became the group GSR for a while because I was the only one that could get the area assembly. All right? I used to record the guys and hold it up at the microphone at area assembly. But anyhow, I left the institution, I became a parole officer in the streets. I always liked to play cops and robbers. I had a gun. I supervised people in the community. You know, I had to do what we do, you know, search for absconders, make arrests, whatever it is. Also try to help guys to reintegrate into society. And I liked it. I later became a senior parole officer. Now, I stopped going to the meetings on the Hill for a while because I thought, man, I write warrants. I can't be going up there, right? And I can't. But you know what? Somebody sent a letter, said, we need help from the outside. And I said, man, how did you become so precious? And then I said, I got to go in. So I started going back in. And the guy who asked us to come in there, right, he transferred. He wasn't there. They weren't really happy to see us. Found out what I did for a living, and the next, because I told my story, next week was a much smaller meeting. Right? But eventually they came to understand, I'm just an alcoholic. When I walk into an AA meeting, I am an alcoholic. And that's all I'm there for. Right? I want to tell you that I wish I could tell you that I followed this tradition completely and absolutely. Okay. However, right? What I mean, even today, I got to work these steps. Man, I fell in with the Texas bunch from Texas, and they're so big on working these steps, especially if you've been around a while, right? Because you can get complacent, you can get cocky, you can get a lot of things. But I got off and it's kind of like the Lone Ranger. I felt like I could really pull things off. I'd done a couple stints as DCM by now and stuff. And I was asked to go speak at a drug court. And I walked, and my buddy told me they might have somebody there from the press. I thought, well, if it's somebody from the newspaper, I know how to do that. I remember when I spoke to the FFA. But I got there, there were three newspapers and two radio stations. The judge, the drug court people, the alcoholics and addicts, and their families. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, who am I talking to? I got up and I said, nobody speaks for AA, no photographs, please, and no last names to be used. But I had to talk to the alcoholics. That's who I'm going to talk to if I'm in a room when there's alcoholics there. But then as I'm on my way out, real quick, the guy says, do you mind if we tell them where you work? I said, oh, okay. And I got home, and I didn't sleep well. I got up the next morning, I said, oh, man, I think I just violated the spirit of that tradition. Because I was a senior parole officer just across the border, and I covered five counties. And I was the only one in my job, for God's sake, in five counties across the southern tier of New York. And I called real quick my friend. It was too late. It ran in the newspaper. Okay? I'll tell you what. I could find somebody. I'll find somebody to tell me, oh, you were all right. You didn't really violate the tradition. But you know what? I know I did. It was the spirit of the tradition. And my spirituality went just like that. Right? It hurt me. And I had to get a hold of my sponsor real quick. And I had to talk about it. I went to a family reunion a couple days later. And my nosy cousin, oh, that must have been you in the newspaper. And what could I do? I didn't say anything. I didn't say yes or no. I just went like that. Right? I said a prayer, though. I said my screw-up prayer. You're welcome to use this. It's a form of a tenth step. God, I can't believe I did that sober. You know? God, I feel bad, but I can't drink. I can't drink over this. I got to move on. If you can make any good come out of this, please do. And here I'm standing. So, I hope that some good comes out of it. Please, the spirit that we have, when I go to those meetings on the Hill, and we have a bunch of inside people and a bunch of outside people, we take turns. Somebody from the inside will get up and speak. Somebody from the outside will get up and speak. Somebody from the inside. You close your eyes, pretty soon you can't tell who are the inmates and who are the outside sponsors. It's the message of AA. It's the language of the heart. We're experts at gypping ourselves. Anybody that violates this tradition, the only thing I can say is you're screwing yourself. Because I cannot continue to grow if I'm violating a tradition such as this one. And in closing, I would like to say, if you have any questions about the digital age and electronic media and so on, you're out of luck with me. Right? But I would say this, that we have a wonderful booth out here at the anonymity booth, and they got a whole breakdown on that stuff. And you can grab that and read it. I found it very informational. And also... I was told you could just ask a young person. I guess there's some of these icky pods that really know that stuff, and they can help us not violate that tradition. I always know who I'm talking to when I'm emailing somebody or any other form of that stuff. Thank you for letting me share and make amends.
Thank you very much, John. I must have terrorized these guys because they won't let me pull their jackets or pants or whatever. Thank you so much. Great talk. Our next speaker is Kyle H. from California, and his sobriety date is August the 4th, 2003. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, man. I'm in agony here. I tried to give my minutes away. They wouldn't take them. You know, the only reason I'm here is because I was taught when you're asked to do something, you do it. And that's the only reason. You know, I don't know what I know about anonymity. I know my story very well. You know, I'm 11 years sober, and I've had experience both good and bad in it, myself personally as well as others. Bullet points. what had happened was Jim had asked me to do this, and Eva had, and I immediately printed everything I could find on anonymity because, you know, I don't want to sound stupid in front of you guys, right? And I called Eva, and she said, you know, just your experience, just what you have on it. And so, you know, I buried my head in the sand and prayed like I believe we should do. And that's, you know, I just want God to speak through me or whatever it is I have to say. But, you know, I got nervous this morning since we've got on the plane, I've drove my poor wife crazy about this thing. Oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done? You know, and I'm not beyond running. And I got to tell you, I thought about it. But I did. So, you know, a half an hour ago, I wrote some bullet points, right? I go, you know, wait till the last minute because, you know, I do. And forgive me if I do look down, but, you know, I just need them. I usually pray. So, you know, when I got sober, you know, and that's the deal, you know. I heard John give thanks to a sponsor and say that he saved his life, and mine did also. You know, certainly it's the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. But my sponsor, you know, has taught me these things, and I'm gonna give him the blame too if something goes wrong up here too. And I told him that. I told him that. You know, I've never spoken anything like this. I come from a small town. We have 3,500, one stoplight. Just got that, half a sidewalk. You know, this is a good meeting where I come from, right? And that's the truth, right? And that being said, you know, we have as many anonymity breaks there as we do anywhere else. You know, we got a little small market, and you'll hear people come across the market, hey, Kyle, you going to the meeting tonight? And da-da-da-da, you know, and that's stuff you just live with. You know, I think as sponsors and as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's our duty to pass this on with these traditions, you know, mean and such. When I first got here, you know, it was my plateful. The honest truth is it was all I could handle to stay sober and work the steps. So maybe I wasn't ready for the traditions quite then. And you know, I followed my sponsor around like a little puppy dog. So, you know, I did what he did. And that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't know where that came from because I had just a moment of clarity where I was willing to do it someone else's way. That had never happened before. And, you know, it's 40 years, right? And then the obsession to drink it was lifted, you know. So I realized, you know, early on that, you know, that this thing could work. So, you know, that was one of my first revelations when my sponsor said, and believe so, I had my best friend died in 77, and I was may or may not be responsible for driving the vehicle drunk that he died in. And so I knew I was an alcoholic, you know, in high school, and I didn't get sober till 2003. So, you know, that's a lot of years of not doing it someone else's way. And in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, thought I had tried it. It never worked a step, right? But, you know, I'm sure someone had pounded the importance. I'm a big book thumper back at home, too. You know, and it's because of that. But, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. You know, I'm grateful that there's someone there to teach us that, and you know, I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I just to qualify, you know, I got here, I just shared with you that, you know, I'd I had ruined everything through my high school years, whether it be sports or friends or girlfriends or a buddy or et cetera. And went into construction. I was sharing with John that, you know, I went to jail, and being a good alcoholic, I manipulated my way into an inmate worker and then into a job. And then I'm in construction, so I built him a nice jail, and then I went to that jail, right? And this is not fun. This is pretty humbling. These people you work with and everything else, and you put this over here so you can't do that, and it's not pleasant, right? And so, you know, I just ran it till the wheels came off, you know. And when I got here, you know, I thought I knew everything because I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know anything. But I knew enough just to, you know, I heard enough to just shut up and do it other ways. My wife and I came, so this is how the weekend start, right? I am just all screwed up on days. Jim had asked us to be of service to do da 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 da. I was supposed to be here 2 days ago. My flight didn't land till one day ago. And so I've already started off behind the wheel. I'm going, oh, I owe, you know, the guy at GSO and an amends because I wasn't here to do the service. And, you know, he graciously let me off the hook. He says, Kyle, I've been beating myself up about these things. You know, thank you. I told him I was glad that my character defects could be of use to him, and he laughed about that. And, you know, that's kind of, I need my glasses here for my bullet points. But anyway, so we get here, and my wife and I, my beautiful wife here, that, you know, how we met Jim. So this is how we got, this how, it's her fault. This is how we got this. We honeymooned in New York to go to visit GSO. And what a way, for those of you who haven't been to GSO, what a neat thing, man. They drop everything they're doing. You're welcome home. A blubbering mess, you know, when we walked through there just because of the history and what went on there. And we also went on to Akron, and our travel agent says, well, who do you know in Akron, right? Because we have Niagara Falls in New York. We got family there. It's friends, right? So, you know, we did all the things to do there, too. And this is well into sobriety. I've done all my night steps. I'm men's. And we're in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. Beautiful. Spent a couple of days there. We would go across to the American side, we walk back across the Freedom Bridge, and I get deported because they look at my record. They go, well, what is this stuff you've done in 78? I don't know. Well, you have two DUIs here. I did that in a week, right? Being a wise ass, I'm telling my wife, what's the worst that can happen to me? So, you know, you know, they say you can't be in Canada if you've had these DUIs, and I'm thinking, well, you just had an international here, right? So I don't know the story behind that, but that's the kind of life I get to live today. My first thought was, because I'm an alcoholic, I'm on the Freedom Bridge, I can make it, I can jump, be with my, because I can make things work. I swear to God, that's my first thought. And then I think, you know, that's my record in there. They're reading. It's not anybody else's. So, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous because I'd have blamed you for it, right? And I am blaming you too, Gary, because I didn't like how you were looking at me up here encouraging me. I don't know him, but he was going, this will be all right. Yeah. So back to anonymity. We get here and we're of service in the booth, the press media booth, right? So I'm going to learn a little bit about anonymity there and Jim's a really good example there and stuff, too, so we got to do that. But, you know, I'm watching people come through the door, and we're greeters slash bouncers at the door there. And everybody that walks through the door naturally wants to take a picture in front of that banner right there, right? So, you know, I know that I'm probably on Facebook a couple thousand times. You know, all joking aside, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, this could be, today, this weekend, could be the biggest breach in anonymity that we have. Just because with the internet being what it is and people taking photos and such like that. And you know, it's a serious thing. And I was really grateful that this room wasn't filled up, but it's also very sad, too, because it is a serious issue. When I was at GSR several years ago, we had a round table in Nevada there, and it was on anonymity in the digital age. I was going around the table, and there was this young girl, and she was interrupted from her cell phone, and she had been posting what was going on Facebook as it was going. And for this, you know, and I had some compassion there after going, what? You know, this was just lack of knowledge. She didn't know. I mean, it really dawned on her. You could see it hit her at that moment. Oh, I shouldn't be doing this. So, you know, I assume some responsibility for that, too. You know, we as sponsors and as members of ACE need to do that. At that same meeting, there was something posted on Facebook, and I hope I don't muddle this story, because there were some alcoholics that were known alcoholics, and they had their spouses with them that were Al-Anons that had alcoholic beverages with it. Somehow this photo got out, and there were known members of Alcoholics Anonymous, which looked like it was partying. So, I mean, it did great damage. You know, it has the capability of doing great damage to us. You know, I heard one of the fellows here, and I'm really glad that you guys covered this better than I am, because it took the weight off me. You know, that I need to be a good... I'm not always a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not, you know. So I don't want to be the face of Alcoholics Anonymous and then while being out there being a jack. Yeah, you know, we live in a small town. I've had members. I'm really have no opinion. I don't do the bumper stickers and such, but we've had members, and we have sheriff blotters where we come from, right? They tell you who you are. You know, you got arrested for da 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 da, and there's vehicles rolled over a DUI with a sticker on it, right? You know. So you know, I just know we have to be careful. I have to be mindful of this. My ego can tell me such things. I have to respect your privacy. I have to respect my privacy. That being said, with just a little bit of sobriety, this thing has grown throughout the years. I've known. When I got here, I was shouting. I was a lunatic. This is the truth. I was wandering the streets of our little town, 3 o'clock in the morning, daring the police that I just worked for, by the way, to stop me because I'm sober for 2-3 days, right? Right? Yeah. And telling people I'm an alcoholic, you know, and this is what represented you when I got sober. And so, you know, and I've learned over the years, and now, like I believe John said, you know, there comes a time when you feel it, and I've had the opportunity to do it with work, and you know, I don't go shout it from the mountaintops right now, but you know, it, I pray and meditate in the morning, and God usually presents stuff that I know is right. You know, there's somebody that needs help, and I have, taking chances isn't the right word. I don't mean to say that, taking chances, but you know, I step out there. I feel okay when I do it, and if I do it with a good heart, you know, I can make mistakes. I just can't insist that I'm right, you know, if they are mistakes. So, you know, when the time is there, you know, I will reach out. We flew from the other coast to here, and virtually from the very first airport we flew, you know, I heard my sponsor this, my sponsor that, you know, in the airport and on the planes and this and that, and you know, as far as I've got to question myself, because I'm telling you the truth, I walked through the door, and my first thing was, look at that, and it's not beyond me. I'm a rookie on Facebook, but it's not beyond me to let something slip out or associate with someone. I have a friend that traveled here, and I comment, or like photos, but then they get here, and say I'm in Atlanta, right? So I've just associated not only myself with Alcoholics Anonymous, but those who are with me. So I've got to, you know, be mindful of that. This topic is not in my wheelhouse, as you can tell. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, and I've watched it work miracles in others. You know, I love my sponsors. I have sponsees. I've just started working with traditions in the past couple of years with sponsees. That's not the way that I was taught, but I thought it was necessary, and I spoke with my sponsor about it, and him and I went through the traditions and stuff together. You know, that does keep us together. We didn't get this thing by sheer luck. What's that big book say? It's hammered out on the anvils of experience or something like that. You know, if you read the traditions, man, we made a lot of boo-boos along the way, right? And we could have went way down the road. You know, there's some traditions in there where, you know, this thing works so great, we should try it on everything, right? And I can understand that, because I'm very proud of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love my life, and I do believe that. I can see my ego taking me there. I've got to be careful, because I'm not always a good representative of Alcoholics Anonymous, And you know, that's just it. I tried to eat up as much as time as I could. Thank you. That's about all I can do.
Thank you so much, Kyle, and that was a great talk. Can we please thank Corey, John, and Kyle again for the great talks?